the volume a bit higher, please. Krishna Krishna Hare Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Ram Ram Hare Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Jai Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari Jaya 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 Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Girivara Dhari Jaya Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Girivara Dhari Jaya Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Girivara Dhari Jaya Girivara Dhari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari
Yashoda Nandana Jaya
ब्रज जन रंजना जया ब्रज जन रंजना जया यशोदा नंदना जया ब्रज जन रंजना जया ब्रज जन रंजना जया यशोदा ब्रज जन रंजना जया ब्रज जन रंजना जया यमुना तीर वन सारी जया कुंज विहारी जया यमुना तीर वन सारी जया कुंज विहारी जया यमुना तीर वन सारी जया कुंज विहारी
Jai Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Jai Sita
ప్రభుపాదకి నమాచార్య శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్ కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధా కృష్ణ గోప గోవినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధాకుండ గిరి గోవర్ధానికి బృందావన్ ధామ్కి మాయపూర్ ధామ్కి మధురపురి ధామ్కి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామ్కి ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి గంగమాయికి యమునమాయికి తులసీదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌర్ ప్రేమనందే ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు అని శ్రీ గౌరాంగ All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Vishnu Padaya, Vishnu Prasthaya, Bhugaleshwara, Bhaktivedanta Swami, Namine, Namaste, Sarasvadevam, Gauravani Prajarini, Narvishesha, Shunyavadi, Pashchatyadeshadharini. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనం మాం కరుణానిధే కర్మగ్రాహ్య గృహీతాంగం మాముద్ధర భవార్ణవాల్ శ్రీమల్ భాగవదాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణమేవ హి స్వీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవ సాగరే మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవ భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పాదయోర్స్తవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాథస్త్వం నో యద ప్రభో నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వభావ ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖశమనం తం నమామి హరిం పరం జన్మాద్యస్య యతోన్వయాదితరద చార్తేష్వభిజ్ఞ స్వరాల్ తేనే బ్రహ్మహృద య ఆదిగవయే ముహ్యంతి యల్ సూరయం తేజో వాయుమృదం యథా వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృషాధామ్నా స్వేన సదా నిరస్త కుహకం సత్యం పరం ధీమహి ధర్మ ప్రోజ్జిత కైతమోత్ర వరమో నిర్మల్సరాణాం సతాం వేద్యం వాస్తవమస్త్ర వస్తు శివదం తాపత్రయోన్మూలనం శ్రీమల్భాగవదే మహాముని కృదే కింవాభరై ఈశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యవరుద్యేత్ర కృతిభీ శుశ్రూషుభీ తల్క్షణాల్ నిగమకల్పతరోర్గలితం ఫలం శుకముఖాదమృతద్రవ సంయుతం పిపద భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహో రసికా భువి భావుకాః సచ్చిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోల్పత్యాదిహేతవే తాపత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ మయం నమః యం ప్రవ్రజందం అనుభేదం అభేదకృత్యం ద్వైపాయనో విరహకాతరమాజుహావ പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയ തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിം ആനദോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖില ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപം അതിഥിതീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനും ഉപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യം നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയിൽ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കലവേണുക്കൊണിതാതൃതാനനേന്ദോ മമ വാജി വിജൃംഭദാ മുരാരേർ മധുരിം ന കണികാഭി കാഭി കാഭി നമാഹോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിതി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശതാരിണേ ശ്രീമൽഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശാം യാസാം ഹരികഥോദ്ധീതം പുനാദീഭുവനത്രയം ശ്രീഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിതചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായം അതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വതാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരകാം വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമാം മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ So, last Sunday, we started the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we were discussing the first chapter of the ninth canto, where basically we were talked about the that... the origin of the Sola dynasty, and also the briefly about the beginning of the Luna dynasty, how these two different dynasties came into existence. This is what we spoke about in last Sunday. So this ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is basically continued to discuss the Sola dynasty in little bit more detail, and a brief introduction into the Luna dynasty. That is how the ninth canto goes. So in the Sola dynasty, if you see, we were talking about the experience of the king Vaivasvata Manu, that is Shradheva, whose son had to change his form from male form to female form, back to male form, like this, alternately back and forth. And eventually he decided to give up this, realizing that I am neither male nor female, I am spirit soul. This consciousness became very strong in his mind, and he decided to give up his body and go back to the spiritual world. Because this changing body is his business in this world, one form or the other. And once we come to our original Krishna conscious entity, as spirit soul, this bodily designations have no meaning. This is finished with this material world. But in the spiritual world, this identification with the body doesn't exist. And therefore, when we leave the material world and go back to the spiritual world, the distresses associated with the material body also goes away. It is with the bodily identification that the distresses begin. And similarly, When the bodily identification finished with this material body, the distress also leaves there. So anyhow, Shatadeva's son, Sudyumna, went to Ilavrata Varsham by Lord Shiva's curse. He had to accept the female body, became Ila, and then married Buddha, the son of Chandra. The moon dynasty begins from there. From that marriage, Pururavas was born, King Pururavas. And that King Pururavas started the beginning of the Luna dynasty. That much was spoken in the first chapter, and then we finish there. But now what happens is, we are going back again into the life of Shatadeva or Vaivasvata Manu. Vaivasvata Manu had, after this experience with the first child, then he went and performed severe penances in the forest. And the result of that was that Vaivasvata Manu had born 10 sons from that. And all these 10 sons were Kshatriyas. They were very, very powerful kings at that time. And their dynasties are discussed in the next many, many chapters. It goes on. And when we discuss in that process, we eventually come to the appearance of Lord Ramchandra, who appeared in the Solar dynasty, as the in the tradition of the first eldest son, who is known as Ikshvaku. So that is why in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the Imam Vivasvade Yogam, the science of Krishna consciousness was spoken by me. Krishna says, Proktavanaham Avyayam. That Avyayam, doesn't have any destruction, doesn't get destroyed. This is knowledge. This knowledge stays always in this creation by Krishna's arrangement. It stays here. So that people who wants to develop the understanding of spiritual life and who wants to go back to the spiritual world will get an opportunity to follow this process. That is how Srimad Bhagavad Gita has come into existence in this world. But as Krishna said, that due to the effect of time is Krishna. Time is a manifestation of Krishna who destroys everything in this world. Imam vivasvade yogam protavanaham avyayam vaivasvan manuve praha manur ikshvaguve bravil. That is how Krishna says, this is how I spoke to Vaivasvan, and then Vivasvan has spoken to his son Vaivasvata Manu, and then Manu has spoken to his son Ikshvaku. Krishna says that then it got lost. Sa evadyam maya dedya yoga prokta viradhanam. Then it's such an old yoga system, Krishna says. It's not a new thing that I have introduced into this world, but it is such an old system. And this knowledge got lost somehow due to the influence of time. Everything else in this world, you can see also that things change in this world all the time. This is why it's called Maya. Maya's one of the nature of Maya is constantly changing. Nothing will stay in this world. Even if you establish anything in this world permanently, with the intention of, let it stay here permanently. With that intention, if you establish something here, nothing will stay here. It will change. That is the nature of Maya. Maya's one of the attributes is constant change. There are 6 different attributes to Maya, which I'll discuss later. But one of the attributes of Maya is this constant changing nature. So in the influence of time and the 3 modes of material nature, Maya has made this arrangement that nothing will stay here permanent. It has to change constantly. So in the same way, Ikshvaku's tradition, they lost Bhagavad Gita, and then Krishna came and so spoke to his pure devotee Arjuna again, so that this Bhagavad Gita should stay in this world. So it will go on like this, that somebody will always, Krishna will make arrangements that some great personality will come and present and establish Krishna's religious principles in this world, so that those who are sincere and in desiring to understand the ultimate goal of life and the ultimate purpose of living in this world, then they can take advantage from the teachings what Krishna has left behind. So here what we see is now is this dynasty of the 10 children of Vivasvata Manu, starting with Ikshvaku. Ikshvaku's family, that Ikshvaku's children came up, and then we find there the great personality called Dilipa. Dilipa is another name of Dilipa is Katwanga, which you will hear about him later. This Katwanga story, Sukadeva Goswami says in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that this Katwanga had this one great opportunity that he fought for a long time in the heavenly planet, and then when he realized that he hasn't got much time left in his life, he immediately came back to this planet and engaged in Krishna consciousness and went back to the spiritual world. Such a powerful personality was Katwanga. Katwanga, as another name, is Dilip. And then there is a great king known as Raghu. And therefore this dynasty is known as Raghuvamsham. And then there is Aja. And then there is Dasharatha. And then Shri Ram, Lord Ramchandra. Like that, that lineage goes on. There's a lot comes about that later. But after Ikshvaku, the first eldest son, there were 9 more boys who were born in the same father. That is from Shraddhaiva. And then Shraddhaiva or Vaivasudamanu, the 9 boys, one after the other, Nrga. Nrga came the next one. And Nrga and Nrga's experiences and his dynasty is expressed there. Father to son who came after that. Like all that is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then there was another powerful king known as Shariyati. This Shariyati had a great experience with a sage known as Chavana. So this Chavana Maharshi, the sage Chavana, Shariyati and his daughter Sukanya, Vedavyasa Maharshi through one chapter kept their story separately. That is the next chapter or the third chapter in the ninth canto. It's the story of Shariyati and Sukanya. And there is a lot to learn from their life also. All these personalities in the Srimad Bhagavatam is telling us that you learn from us something. Some of them are telling us you become like us. Some of them are telling us you don't become like us. So that is what all this Puranam, all this Bhagavata, Srimad Bhagavatam, all the personalities what you find in the Bhagavatam, they all have some message to give it to us. Those who are reading Srimad Bhagavatam will get that message. The understanding is that by listening to them, we will understand how to act properly in spiritual life. This is the understanding from this. That we don't do things whimsically, what we like. No, that is not the system. The system is that we learn from the previous experience of these great personalities. So Shariyati and Sukanya, that is a story on itself. So that will come to that after the second chapter. So in the second chapter, there is more description of the rest of the children. That is, after Shariyati, there is the story of Dishta. And Dishta's story and his children and what happened to them. This is explained there in that chapter. Similarly, next son, Drishta. And their interesting story is that Drishta's children were all Kshatriyas. But by nature, by their qualities, they became Brahmanas. So you can see one of the interesting thing in the solar dynasty you will find is that many of the personalities who appear there clearly indicates that this Varnashrama Dharma, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra were not based on the birth. This is the one of the indications in that solar dynasty we get from. That generally people have the impression that by birth alone one should determine whether one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra. In this way we classify people into different Varnas. But Srimad Bhagavatam says here that this is not always true, because in several instances in the Bhagavatam, Sri Narada Maharshi and Vedavyasa Maharshi wanted to mention this particular point, that if one has developed sufficient qualities to act in a particular Varna, obviously he belongs to that Varna. Yassa yallakshanam proktam pumsam varna bhivyanjagam. In the seventh canto we have seen Sri Narada Muni saying to Maharaj Yudhishthira this thing. Yasayal lakshanam proktam. Lakshanam or the symptoms of that personality is important. Pumso varnabhivyanjagam. That what varnam he belongs to. It's not based on one person's birth. It is based on a person's qualities. That is how you decide whether he is a Brahmana or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or Shudra. And this particular point comes through the life of these 10 children, because they all were different. All 10 of them were different. So Drishta's sons became Dhashtas. They were Kshatriyas by birth, but they decided that we want to develop like Brahmanas. Somehow or the other, their consciousness was such. Got the body in the Kshatriya body, a Kshatriya family, but decided to become Brahmanas. But they developed the qualities like that. They decided to go perform penances, austerities, truthfulness, all the qualities associated with Brahmana they cultivated, they developed. So the result was that they became Brahmanas at the end. They have to be recognized as Brahmana. So you can see from this that the principle of Varnashrama Dharma, although it has become a tradition now that Brahmana son is a Brahmana and Kshatriya son is Kshatriya, that rule doesn't apply according to Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is denying that that way of establishing Varnashrama Dharma. So this is precisely the reason that if we do not follow these instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam, more often we get into difficulties. We start misleading people also. That sometimes you will never know that maybe someone takes birth in different conditions. But in spite of that, you will find that because that person had a good spiritual upbringing or spiritual desire in him, by nature that person automatically builds up his spiritual qualities. And not only that, in course of time one has to recognize that the spiritual qualities in that person and automatically accept him as belonging to the higher means belonging to the Brahmana or a Kshatriya Varna. That is necessary also. Yasayalakshanam proktam pumso varna abhivanjagam. That Shri Narada Muni says this in the 7th canto to Shruti Yudhishthira Maharaj. So here, this has happened to. Then, after this, there was a very interesting personality whose story we are going to discuss in this chapter. His name was Pradagrashta. Pradagrashta was one of the king's sons of Shraddadeva or Vivasvata Manu, who, when he was born and he grew up as a prince, the system those days was that the Kshatriya princes, they were trained to fight from the very beginning. As the most of their training during the princely life will be how to deal and fight with others, especially when they had to protect their kingdoms. So Pradagrishna grew up as a prince, and this Pradagrishna had one quality that in those days, as you know, that the kings, when they ruled with firm hand. They would not tolerate nonsense. Unlike in our modern system of administration, what we find is everything is so relaxed. In the name of freedom and in the name of satisfying the voters, we have forgotten the fact that a good administration is not necessarily always what the voters are talking about. Voters discuss something and voters may vote for something. But not to have any quarrel between the people, not to have any fight between the people, we have established a system whereby everybody gets a chance to vote and we elect somebody and somebody becomes the head of the government and they, with the assistance of the parliament and so many other entities, they are able to keep some administration going. But the difficulty with the system is that if you want to maintain higher religious principles and to elevate people spiritually to higher consciousness, it becomes very difficult. That's what we find, experience in this world. But here you will notice, these Kshatriya kings who ruled the planet at that time, they ruled with a very firm hand. In other words, they will not tolerate any nonsense in the name of spiritual life. They themselves acted properly on one hand because they were trained like that. On the other hand, they expected the people also to follow them in their life in this world. Although the father, like a father, has to be firm with the children, exactly in the same way it was expected the king will be firm with his subjects. So that's how it was. So anyway, there was another side to it also, that the king did not make whimsical decisions based on what he thought is right. No, he also had to consult authorities. And these authorities were different than the authorities what we have today. For example, like the kings maintained the sages, but the sages would not accept anything from the kings in return. Maintained in the sense means they will take their advice, but apart from that, the sages made sure, like in this particular instance in the second chapter, we are coming across the life of Vasishtha. Vasishtha Maharshi was actually the sage, such a great personality, who advised the whole solar dynasty right from Ikshvaku right up to the end. He was there. Also, that means he has lived such a long time. Even when Lord Ramchandra had to go away to the forest for 14 years and then he went to Sri Lanka to kill Ravana and all that. At that time, Vasishtha managed everything in Ayodhya because Bharata himself was not qualified enough to do the administration. Bharata needed help and advice all the time, and Vasishtha provided that. And he was a great personality, this Vasishtha, who married Arundhati Devi. Arundhati is the daughter of Kardama Prajapati. So you can see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Kardama Prajapati story comes in the third canto, which we studied very seriously. And Kardama Pradyapati married his 9 daughters to 9 great personalities, and one of them, Atri, Vasishtha, they are all the sages who married Kardama Pradyapati's daughters. So Vasishtha married Arundhati, who is daughter of Kardama Pradyapati, and both of them, their stories are all in the other Puranas mentioned, how powerful they were. If you see Vasishtha's life and Vasishtha's strong austerities and penances and the strength they got from that, the result of that was these great Kshatriya kings, they had to depend on their advice for their administration. On the other hand, Vasishtha would not accept any kind of material benefits in return, because they would not like at any time to surrender their independent thought in any form to the king. So the kings were very frightened. Actually, they were frightened of these sages. In other words, what the sages said, they had to obey, they had to follow. So in other words, the chances of committing a mistake easily was very little. That the sages protected the religious principles. The Kshatriyas or the kings, they administered everything and implemented them. The result was that the people were benefited from that. They understood the importance or the importance or the value of spiritual life, and they were forced to follow the religious principles in their life. This was the benefit of having an administration like that. It may look a little bit heavy-handed, but on the other hand, unless it is forcefully imposed on people, people would not accept that. Normal tendency, everybody likes to be free and independent. Nobody likes being told. That is the nature of this world. We all know that very well. How difficult it is to encourage people to take to spiritual life, because senses are uncontrolled. And uncontrolled senses and mind will demand something else. So people want to take to that. So anyway, here, what is interesting in this third chapter is that the in this second chapter is that Vasishtha Muni was practicing his penances in the forest. So Pritagrishta was a prince, and with the intention of serving the sages, he went to the forest to serve Vasishtha Muni. So Vasishtha Muni told him, "Why have you come here?" He said, "Well, I would like to do some service to you." Vasishtha Muni said, "All right." Vasishtha Muni, in the forest he was living, he won't even accept a residence in the village or in the town, because they never believed in that. Forest was their place where they lived, and they could cultivate their austerities and penances purely for this reason. Then Vasishtha Muni would not consider who the king is, and his opinion is doesn't matter to him. As far as he is concerned, that his austerities, tapas is the wealth, or the tapas, what he has gained. In different times in this world, different things are considered to be wealth. Today, sometimes we consider stocks and shares are wealth. Somebody else will say gold is wealth. And only you have to look back a little, about 50, 60, 70 years ago, these things were not considered wealth at all. Land was considered wealth. Or one who is a big farmer, he's got hundreds and thousands of acres of land. People will consider, oh, he's a very wealthy farmer. He's got a lot of land. Because land was considered at that time as the symptom of wealth. So this thing changes all the time in this world. Nothing stays here. Today, if you say to somebody that I am a farmer, I got so many other people say, no, leave me alone. I don't want to do any farming business. Because you are waiting for your subsidy from the EU to make money. So you have to do all kinds of things. It's not based on any proper principles that this farming has become an industry as well. So you can imagine how things change. So anyway, in that situation, at the time when the sages were living, tapas was considered wealth. None of these were wealth. Land was not considered wealth. Gold was not considered wealth. None of these bank balance or credit cards or nothing was wealth then. The wealth was considered to be tapas. One who has performed strong austerities and penances, that was their wealth. And Vasishtha Maharshi was a tapodhanan. That means he is wealthy, so wealthy with tapas that anyone will consider him to offer their services to him. So Pratagrishta came to the forest, asked Vasishtha Muni. Vasishtha Muni told him that I have a few cows there in the cowshed. Please look after them, because in the night time, sometimes the wild animals from the forest, they come down looking for to kill the cows and eat them. So Pratagrishta was sitting there, and while he was sitting there, in the one night, somehow it so happened that Vasishtha Muni was not there, that Pratagrishta was supposed to be watching the cows in the Goshala, and where the cows were kept. And in the darkness, because it was so cloudy, he couldn't even see anything. And in the he was sitting there, in the Bhagavatam says he was sitting in Virasanam. Virasanam is a position for the yogis where they could immediately jump up and do whatever that is necessary. So he was used to yoga system, so he was practicing Virasanam. In Virasanam he was sitting there with the sword in the hand and watching, protecting these cows in the Goshala. Suddenly in the night, a tiger came in and tried to catch hold of one cow from this group there, from the herd there. As soon as he heard the crying of the cows, immediately Pratakrishna jumped from there with the sword in the hand, and in the darkness he tried to hit the used the sword against this tiger, and thinking that it was a tiger, he tried to kill the animal, but the result was that the tiger didn't get hit by the sword, but on the other hand, a cow got killed, but at the same time, the tiger's, one of the ears got cut very badly. So because of the pain, severe pain the tiger was experiencing, tiger jumped out from there and ran away to the forest again, backwards, back into the forest. So Pratakrishna thought at that time that I have now killed the tiger, because in the darkness he couldn't see anything. He came back and sat there in his place happily. In the morning when the sun came out, he looked inside, and what he saw was, to his own amazement, that the cow was killed by him. So, when the cow got killed, Pratakrishna didn't know what to do now. So, he thought first that I've killed the tiger, but actually in reality he has killed the cow. So, the only thing he could do was now to report to the matter to Vasishtha. So he went and told Vasishtha about this. Vasishtha said to him that what you have done is extremely wrong. Now, here is some question comes. After all, Pratakrishna has done unknowingly, isn't it? It was not he has done it deliberately, decided to kill a cow. He was trying to protect the cows. But the result was that in the process, he killed a cow. Should he be punished or not? This question comes. Now, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, according to Vasishtha Maharshi, if you do something knowingly or unknowingly, if you do something wrong, knowingly or unknowingly, or if you did not know that the scripture itself forbidden that. So these are the three options you have. Either knowingly you did it, or unknowingly you did it, without knowledge, like Pratakrishna has done. Pratakrishna knew that it was wrong to kill a cow. Pratakrishna also knew that Shastras prevent killing cows at any cost. And Pratakrishna has done it unknowingly. Should he be punished? This was the question. In answer to that, Vasishtha Maharshi very categorically said, if you do not escape, if you do not get punished in this life, you are going to be punished later on in a much severe scale. Rather, you take the punishment now. This was the decision by the sage. In the modern world, we have some understanding like this. We sometimes think, oh, he's such an innocent man. He didn't know anything about it. He has done this. So we shouldn't punish him. Sometimes you see in the paper also, somebody has killed somebody else. And then he goes to the court, and court says to him, oh no, his mind was not in the right, he was not in the right frame of mind. Or something they will say like this, and they let him go. He says, it's alright. And then he goes and kills someone else again after some time. And then again the court says, oh no, he should be examined by another psychiatrist or whatever that is. And then they have their own system. So all this is coming from the idea that if you commit a sinful activity, should he be punished or not? According to Vasishtha Muni, that in either of the situation, if you don't take the punishment now, you have to take the punishment later on a much bigger scale. Rather, you get punished now. This was his point to Pratakrishna. He told Pratakrishna, although you were born as a Kshatriya, now you become a Shudra. Your qualities will be like a Shudra. Pratakrishna said to him, Vasishtha Muni at that time, Mahaprabhu, please give me the punishment now. Let me suffer now. Just see how the principles were at that time. Moral values of the people. He was willing to accept the punishment rather than thinking that Nowadays people will think, if I can escape from the punishment at any cost, they will do anything what they can. Right from the top, that is the mentality in the society. But that was not the mentality of the people who lived under these strict religious traditions. They followed and they accepted the punishment because they knew that life doesn't begin with the death of this material body. This is where it comes from. When you start thinking that everything is finished with this body, then what happens after that? Who knows that I'm going to be punished later? If I can get away this time with this, fine, let me get away. This is the attitude. But that was not their way of thinking. They realized that even if I'm not punished now, I'm going to face this later at some point or the other. So rather I may take it now. Why leave it for later? So this is the thinking behind it, that Pratakdrishta decided to accept that. And after accepting the punishment, Pratakdrishta realized that now what I'm going to do, I don't want to go back into the kingdom and engage in all the administrative activities because I don't have that. Vasishtha Muni has not allowed me to do that. Rather, he expects me to give up this life, live as a Shudra and leave this life. So he rather started preparing for his death. And for a long time, Pratakdrishta started performing austerities and penances. And when he was walking in the forest one day, suddenly he saw, by now, his nature was more or less, he was like a his whole body has become so much due to austerities, it has become like what we studied about Rishabhadev. He became mad in his mind, that altogether the bodily concept has left him to such an extent that he started wandering around freely without like a deaf and dumb person. And eventually when he found a big forest fire in the thick forest, he jumped into the fire and gave up his body and went back to the spiritual world. This is how Srimad Bhagavatam says about this. From this you can understand that Pratakdrishta realized that what he has done was wrong. Number one, by killing a cow, he had to give up his own life because he realized the serious consequences coming from that, and he did not want to accept any more punishment after death. So he wanted to finish it up here and there, and the Vasishtha Muni allowed him to do that. Such was the conviction of those personalities in those days that they accepted. And think about it today, how much we feel about killing a cow. That how much we feel, how much we are concerned about it, and how much difficulty we have with our mind in killing these poor innocent animals like this. So anyway, that is the quality of culture. That is the difference in the spiritual culture and the materialistic culture. And these values changes when one is devoid of spiritual consciousness, spiritual understanding. All the base qualities will develop in a person, and then anything happens, he would not be able to accept that. That means, like this, in the case of Pratakdrishta, he was willing to give up that body because of this commitment what he has done. Vasishtha Muni, like so many other sages, his duty was to advise the king and advise him in the right direction. Based on his tapas, his penances and austerities, based on the understanding of the shastras, what he has, Vasishtha Muni has written many, many great Vedic literature, which is very, very well known. Jnana Vasishtham, one of the famous books of Vasishtha Muni, running into thousands and thousands of verses from his realizations. Yoga Vasishtham is another book he has written. So in those books, Vasishtha Muni talks about so many lifetimes of the great personalities in the previous kalpas of Lord Brahma. To such an extent, he had the Trigala Jnanam, or in other words, time before, time now, and the time of the future. So many things he has compiled into these great books of Vasishtha Maharshi. So this Vasishtha Maharshi, it's not, although his role in the society was just like an advisor to the king. Advisor means the king has got the option to consult him at a time when king himself doesn't know what is the right thing to do. He has got the opportunity to consult these great personalities. That is how they lived. On the other hand, they would not accept anything from the king because they want to keep their independence in their mind and in their daily activities. And as far as life is concerned, they accepted the very, very minimum from this world for their maintenance, of the bodily maintenance is concerned. It is not exactly the same. Just like today also we have something similar. But today what they say, they are all spin doctors, that's what they're called. So this spinning is going on all the time. The spin doctors gives the advice and the government follows that. But after 2 years, the spin doctor gets into trouble and the spin doctor goes from the position.
And then another spin doctor comes and he starts spinning then. And he drives this ministry along with that. So this is the modern, this is the whole thing is so deteriorated that the person who gives the advice, the person who takes the advice, they're all in the same unfortunate situation that it is simply becomes a purely a political agenda. It has no meaning at all at the end because it is not based on the principles like we find here. Vasishtha Muni and Pratakrishta. Just see the relationship that there is no compromise on values. Values are concerned, shastras, and their injunctions are held, upheld. Vasishtha Muni is not living at the cost of the so-called king. He's totally independent. Because he is independent, he can enforce his rules strictly. And if he doesn't accept that, he will curse him and burn him into ashes. That is how powerful they were. And this is their strength. It is from this, that strength of these great sages, that Vedic literature has owes them so much. That all the great, great Vedic mantras, Vasishtha Muni, Vishwamitra Muni, Asita, Devara, Vyasa, so many great personalities in the Vedic tradition who gave us the Vedic mantras through all the, by their austerities and mantras, they are known as Drashtav. Drashtava means, I don't know how to translate that in English, because in the closest thing what you can say is they discovered the mantras. Or through their austerities and penances, Krishna has revealed to them the different mantras which has become the hymns in the Rigvedam, Samavedam and Yajurvedam. All these Vedas, the Vedic hymns have come from these sages. So the sages and the Vedas, they have a very close link. All the Upanishads mantras, they all have been discovered by these sages. But they are called mantra drashtava. Drashtava means from one from whom, who have the cause, who have, from whose mind these mantras have been revealed. It has been revealed to them so that by Krishna. So therefore they have become mantra drashtava. Just like today also, when some great scientist, he discovered something, it's not that it is because of his brain that he has invented, which is foolish to think like that. Actually, he was putting a lot of effort into it, and some Krishna decided that he can have the result of his experiments, and somehow he invents something new, and then he becomes famous for that, for inventing something. Something similar to that, but at the same time, because they have served Krishna so much, that Krishna has given them this mantras, Vedic mantras to them, and that is how all the Vedic mantras have come into effect. So this Pratakrishta story comes in that chapter, and then after that, there are the other kings' stories also mentioned there. And one of the most interesting thing is that here you will find that there was a king by name Narishenda. Narishenda had sons, and their sons and gone like that. They were all Kshatriyas. But then there was a group of children, they were called Agnivesyas. Agnivesyas means they became Brahmanas. That was one of their nature. They became Brahminical nature. Although Kshatriyas, they were born in Kshatriya families, but they also became Brahmanas. They were known as Agnivesya Brahmanas. That is one of the Shradhadeva's children. And then we have got also, Dishtha's son was Nabhaga. And in that family of Nabhaga somehow, although Kshatriya, he was not interested in administration. He was very interested in agriculture and cow protection. In other words, he started acting like a Vaishya. His interest was in the cow protection and agriculture. Somehow or the other, he got a liking for it. He was not interested in defending his kingdom or administering the country or anything like that. The result was that he was called as a Vaishya. Nabhaga was called as a Vaishya. So you see, Kshatriya families, some of them became Brahmanas, some of them became Vaishyas. So you can see all the Varnas can change also if one develops those qualities, develops in a person automatically like that. But one interesting thing was, in that family of Nabhaga, if you go along further and further, there was a great king called Trinabindu. Trinabindu appeared in that family. And Trinabindu was a very powerful king. He was a Kshatriya king. And this Trinabindu married an Apsaras girl from the heavenly planets whose name was Alambusha. So Alambusha and Trinabindu got married, and in that relationship they had a beautiful daughter by name Idavida. That was her name. And this beautiful girl, she was married to one of the sons of Pulastya Maharshi. His son's name was Vishravas. So Vishravas married Idavida, and from that relationship Vaishravanan was born. Vaishravana was the great king of the wealth, or the who is in storage of the great treasures. So like that family has come up like that in that way. Then if you go the rest of the children, as I mentioned, spoke about, there is another boy whose name was Kavi. He was very young, the youngest of all. The interesting thing about Kavi was, Kavi from the very early age realized that life is meant for spiritual realization. It came up to him. He doesn't want to get involved in Brahmana business, Kshatriya business, Vaishya business, nothing. He said, I just want to go back to the spiritual world. So determined he was. He went to the forest, performed penances, serious austerities and penances, and took advantage of the association of Vasishtha Muni also. The result was that he gave up his body and went back to the spiritual world. This is the solar dynasty's growth. Just imagine, a group of kings like this, if they rule the planet, what will be the situation? So, from then, you also see, there is the story of another great personalities in the same kingdom. So now we are left with Shariyati and Sukanya. That is the one in the third chapter, what is discussed. The story of Shariyati and Sukanya. And then, in the fourth and fifth chapter, in the ninth canto, there is the discussion of Maharaj Ambarish. Throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, you will not find a devotee like Maharaj Ambarish. That is his greatness. Such a great personality that you will be amazed that how can a king become a devotee like this. And not only that, this Ambarish's father was Nabhaga. Nabhaga's father was Nabhaga, who is one among the 10 children of Shraddhadeva or the Vaivasvata Manu. So Nabhaga's children was Nabhaga and Nabhaga's son was Ambarish. That is how that thing goes. So Sukadeva Goswami, being questioned by Parikshit Maharaj, decided to expand the story. Although there was not much time for him to do that, he decided to speak about Ambarish to Parikshit Maharaj. And that is why the fourth and the fifth chapter of the ninth canto, you will find the story of Maharaj Ambarish, which we'll talk later. But prior to that, we will see now what has happened to Shariyati and Sukanya. Shariyati was a powerful Kshatriya king, one of these 10 sons. So Shariyati and Sukanya went to the... Shariyati was very fond of this daughter Sukanya, very beautiful girl. And once it so happened that Shariyati had to go to forest. He went to the forest in hunting, but at the same time he took her also with him, being affectionate to her. And just like a princess goes to the forest, along with the princess, she was also accompanied by so many other servant maids with her. So they all went to the forest together. Not knowing where they reached in the forest, Shariyati was busy in the hunting in the forest. And they were near the vicinity of the ashram of Chavana Maharshi. Chavana Maharshi was there and his ashramam was there at the same place. And Shariyati happened to be nearby during the process of hunting the animals. So Sukanya was there along with her friends. And out of playful nature, Sukanya was wandering around in the forest. Suddenly she saw in the forest that there was an earthworm has built up somewhere, like a mountain. Just to see, if you go into the deep forest, you will find there that this earthworm builds some sort of a like a mud structure, it builds up, and they live in there. So normally this happens wherever something like a rusty feeling you get there when you go. Sometimes some big trees, they get covered by these earthworms, and they try to eat these big trees, and they build this around the big tree. But big trees, they won't get affected by that. But when they get very old, they get eaten by these earthworms. So in that forest, it so happened that where they went, there was a great sage living there. And these sages have got one problem, that they will go into samadhi for months and months together sometime. And this one particular personality there, called Chavana Maharshi, the sage Chavana, he was also there. And sage Chavana was sitting there, and he went into samadhi, and sometimes he won't come back from the samadhi for months together. The result was that he has controlled his breathing, controlled his mind, senses, everything, He is sitting there in total transcendental position, that in samadhi condition, that because he has no movement or anything, these earthworms start building their nest around him. And the result was that the nest was built up so strongly all around that nobody noticed that there was a living being inside. Nobody could see that. But it so happened, the earthworm has built the mud all around except leaving the two eyes. Only the two eyes were visible outside. Everything else was covered with mud by the earthworms. You can still see these things. If you go to the deep forest, you will notice these things. And they got built up in such a way that these two eyes were only visible outside. This poor girl, Sukanya, Shariyadi's daughter, not knowing anything, out of her playful nature, when she started wandering around in the forest, suddenly saw these two eyes sparkling outside from inside this this mud. And out of curiosity, not knowing what is this thing that is sparkling inside, she took a thorn and started poking that to find out what is these two things sparkling from inside. She didn't know that it was the two eyes of this great personality, Chyavana Maharshi, sage Chyavana. And it so happened when she poked them, immediately the blood started coming from there. So she got frightened that she has done something, not knowing very well, out of her childish nature she did that, and she left the scene and went away from there. But the result was that when this thing happened, Chyavana Maharshi was disturbed, obviously from his samadhi. And these sages, they are not ordinary personalities. When they can do a lot of things if they are not in the right properly situated. The result was that all those who were there in that forest in his ashram at that time, including Shariyadi, Sukanya and all her other friends, they all could not pass urine or stool. Everything came to a stop. Not knowing what has happened, why this has caused, Shariyadi was in terrible anxiety. You can imagine what will be the condition when somebody has put into that situation. This body, as long as it works okay, it's fine. But the moment it starts giving trouble, then nothing is fine. Then you start running everywhere, either to hospital or to chemist or to surgery or to GP or this, that, the other, to get this right somehow. That is the nature of this material body. So you can imagine, Chyavana Maharshi decided that whoever has done it, they are not going to be comfortable at all in life. They have stopped their complete activities of this body. In other words, going to toilet, passing urine or stool, everything has become difficult for them. They couldn't do anything. And they realized something has gone seriously wrong. Shariyati was trying to find out, what have we done? Have we offended anybody? Offended Chyavana Maharshi? Any means? This is what has come to his mind. So, it was then that Shariyati want thinking about this in that mood, then Sukanya came up to him and told him that she has done something like this. And only then Chyavana Maharshi realized that what Sukanya has done was she has gone and done this to Chyavana Maharshi. What do we do now? Shariyati didn't know what to do because it is such a difficult situation that obviously Chyavana Maharshi must have cursed something, otherwise this wouldn't have happened. Not only that, what will be the result of this on Sukanya? This is what Shariyati was worried about. He was so affectionate to Sukanya. At the same time, she has committed another offense to a great sage like Chyavana Maharshi. So they found out where Chyavana Maharshi was sitting there, and Chyavana Maharshi was woken up from the samadhi at that time. When they looked at Chyavana Maharshi, what did Shariyati see there? Shariyati saw all his bones were hanging there, and the flesh, the skin was hanging from there. The flesh was there, which is all hanging from the bones. In other words, a person who is about, in today's calculation, if you go to some place and see somebody who is about 95, 100 years old, and you look at their faces, everything, all the different organs are hanging on the body, and blood circulation, everything come to more or less a standstill. It's some sort of body like that, which is a clear representation of approaching death. In other words, the body is ready to drop off any time. And this is what they saw with Chyavana Maharshi. When they saw Chyavana Maharshi in this condition, Shariyadi didn't know what to say. But Chyavana Maharshi was looking at them and in that condition with the blood coming from his eyes. So Shariyadi told Sukanya, pay your obeisances to him now, first thing, before we start talking. Both of them paid their obeisances to Shravana Maharshi, Shariyati and Sukanya. This story is very famous in the Bhagavadam as well as in the Mahabharata also. In almost many other Puranas also it's mentioned. Because this story has some important message to come later. So, what happened was, Shariyati and Sukanya paid their obeisances to Shravana Maharshi. So, and Shariyati started apologizing for what Sukanya has done to him, unknowingly what she has done. Shravana Maharshi didn't speak one word for quite a while. He didn't say anything. He just kept quiet. After some time, Shravana Maharshi asked Shariyati, is Sukanya married? Shariyati got the message. In other words, Shravana Maharshi wanted to marry Sukanya. Now, you can imagine the situation of the father. Daughter, 16 or 17 year old, and the sage Shravana, who is about 95 or 100, almost ready to finish the life, wants to marry her. Shariyati thought for a while that to get out of this crisis, that's the only choice left. Offer her in marriage to Shravana Maharshi. So he told Sukanya that get marry Shravana Maharshi and make him happy. This is what Shariyati told Sukanya. When Shariyati said this to Sukanya, Sukanya was least disturbed. This is the beauty of that. Earlier, we saw in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Swayambhuva Manu brought Devahuti Devi to Kardama Prajapati, what was happening there? Adyo Vaivahiko Vidhi. Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi says there, never in the history has a marriage has happened like this. A marriage like what Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi when they married. Why? Swayambhuva Manu, who was one of the most powerful Manus, such opulence, and this princess Devahuti Devi who comes from him, that she had led such an opulent life as a princess in the palace. Here, Kardama Prajapati in the forest, no house to live, living underneath the tree, no prasadam, nothing, 24 hours serving Krishna, nothing else goes on there. And this is Kardama Prajapati. And Krishna has told Swayambhuva Manu, Brahma actually instructed Swayambhuva Manu, marry your daughter to him. To whom? To Kardama Prajapati. And this is how that marriage happened. And that is why in the Srimad Bhagavatam it says there, Adyo Vaivahiko Vidhi. That is there a vivaham? Is there a marriage like this happened any time before? Never, it says. So why? Because when Swayambhuva Manu put Devahuti Devi on his lap and while offering her in marriage to Kardama Prajapati, tears were coming from Swayambhuva Manu's eyes. Swayambhuva Manu was crying at that time. We may think, was he crying because thinking that, oh, I have to hand over my daughter to such a person who has nothing with him. He's so poor. How is he going to look after my daughter? He has no house to live, no food to eat, no clothes to wear. The clothes Kardama Prajapati wore was the bark of the trees and the fruits and the plants, he ate them and he maintained his life like that. And due to the name itself, Kardama means mud. And because he was performing so much austerities and penances, the body has lost all its splendor. In other words, it has become very dirty. That is why it is called Kardamam. The place name itself indicates that. And Kardama Prajapati, he became like that. But Swayambhuva Manu was not crying because of thinking about that. On the other hand, Sri Shukan says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the tears that was coming from Swayambhuva Manu were not tears out of distress, but tears of happiness. Why? that, the happiness that I could find such a great personality to marry my daughter. This was the happiness in his mind. Accordingly, Devahuti Devi changed her clothes also, and she also adapted to the life of Kardam Prajavati. Exactly the same way here you will see that Sukanya, the moment she married Chavana Maharshi, she immediately gave up all her princess life in the palace with Shariyadi. Shariyadi went back to the palace again, leaving Sukanya there and this old Chavana Maharshi there. So Sukanya served Chavana Maharshi so nicely, and serving so nicely, they got rid of all the problems what they were cursed by Chavana Maharshi. Not only that, in due course, Chavana Maharshi, Sukanya thought herself that after all, my husband is not an ordinary person. He is a powerful sage. If he wants to become young, he can become young. It's not difficult. So, Chavana Maharshi decided. One day, Chavana Maharshi thought himself, that Sukanya, after all, she is young, and she also will have some desire for a happily married life in this world. Why shouldn't I change my body? This is what Chavana Maharshi thought. So it was by accident that the Ashwini Kumaras arrived there one day. Ashwini Kumaras are the demigods in the heavenly planets who gives the youth of the living entities there. In other words, they know the medicines or the system by which one can keep a long life and a very, very strong body. So, when they arrived there, Chavana Maharshi told them that, change my body, he said to them. So, Ashwini Kumaras told them that, what do we get in return if we change your body? Because after all, it's a transaction, isn't it? So, Sukanya served Ashwini Kumaras very nicely. Ashwini Kumaras decided to change Chavana Maharshi's body. So they told Chavana Maharshi, come with us and we will all go and immerse in the tank next door. There was a tank there, and in that tank all three of them went in the water. When they went inside, this old man, they were carrying him. Chavana Maharshi could not even walk properly because he has gone so old, and the whole body, due to these austerities and penances, has become so much, so dry and so lifeless, in the sense that he has virtually, the material body is coming to an end. That was the situation. So the two Ashwini Kumaras had to carry him into the water and take him down in the water, and they also went in. When all three of them came out, there were three youthful personalities there, and all of them looked alike. This was the beauty of that. When they came out of that tank, so when they came out like this, they came back, they looked so much, so youthful, and so strong and good looking. When they came back, Sukanya could not figure out who is who. Who is Ashwini Kumaras and who is my husband Chavana Maharshi. She couldn't find out who it was. So ultimately, Sukanya paid their obeisances to all three of them and told them, Ashwini Kumaras, please tell me who is my husband. And seeing that Sukanya's chastity, Ashwini Kumaras revealed to her who is the actual Chavana Maharshi who has changed the body. Otherwise, all three of them looked alike. So Chavana Maharshi came out from the three, and Sukanya received him nicely, and they had a glorious life in the forest since then. And the two Ashwini Kumaras, they went back to the heavenly planets after that. And Chavana Maharshi told them that they will be rewarded in due course. All these things happened. And after this has happened, our Chavana Maharshi, new Chavana Maharshi, you can say, he was living with Sukanya in the forest. One day, our Shariyadi, Sukanya's father, in the palace, decided to perform a Somayagam. So the kings on those days were very fond of performing sacrifices. It was the process by which they pleased the demigods. And they wanted to offer their respects to the demigods, and in the rest of they wanted to perform a Somayagam. So for the Somayagam, you require the assistance of a great sage who knows how to conduct the Somayagam. So he decided to come to see if Chaitanya Maharshi could assist. When he came to the forest, he couldn't see Chaitanya Maharshi anywhere. On the other hand, what he saw was Sukanya was having a good time with a young man there in this youthful body. So Shariyadi got very upset with her. Shariyadi said to Sukanya that even as a respectable father, he disliked what Sukanya has done. He thought that Sukanya has probably got rid of Chaitanya Maharshi and she is with someone else whom she has met or somebody, something like that. And Shariyadi in the Bhagavatam says that Shariyadi started accusing her for her not being chaste to the husband. And in so many ways, he started criticizing her. But Sukanya smiled at it when he heard all these things. And Sukanya explained to Shariyadi all what has happened, how Chaitanya Maharshi changed the body and got this youthful body. Seeing his daughter's intelligence and the way she acted performed herself, he was extremely pleased with her. He hugged her, Sukanya, and told her that how proud he was that Sukanya has acted so nicely. And then they requested the Chaitanya Maharshi to assist in the Somayagam. Chaitanya Maharshi was watching all these things, what was going on, not saying one word about it. And Chaitanya Maharshi agreed to perform the Somayagam. But in the Somayagam, when the Yagam started, that our Chaitanya Maharshi started making the offerings. And a part of that, in the Yagam, what happens is, all the demigods gets their share. It gets offered to them. So, Rudra Bhagam, different Bhagam, Indra Bhagam, that means the part meant for different demigods. It's offered to them. Agni, Varuna, all of them get that. Ashwini Kumaras don't have any offering in the sacrifices. That is the system. Normally, they are not allowed to receive anything in the sacrifice. Indra knows this very well. And Indra is aware of that. And in all these sacrifices, when performed by such great sages, all the demigods will be present there. So they will come and accept their offering personally in the yagam, in the sacrifice. When the havis is offered to them, they will accept that, and that is this indication that the yagam has gone very well. But when Ashwini Kumaras were called and it was offered, Indra said, "No, you can't offer it to them," he said. Indra is like that. Indra doesn't like anyone else getting anything better. That is Indra. So you may say that Indra is in the heavenly planet, is demigod, this, that and the other. But what you must remember is that this personality, Indra, is always telling us throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, don't become like me. This is what he is saying. But that is what we have to remember always, that through this personality of Indra, Indra is saying every time, so many things he has done. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, you have seen at different instances how he dealt with Rishabhadev. How he dealt with Krishna himself later on in the 10th canto, you will see. So, these things happened and Indra objected. And Indra wanted to use his thunderbolt to kill him. It was then that Chaitanya Maharshi decided that he will put a stop to it. So through his power of austerities, Indra could not lift his hand. It went there, just like he did with earlier, with the king and the daughter. This time, Indra's hands got stuck. It would not move. He could not use his thunderbolt to do anything about it. And Chaitanya Maharshi insisted that the Ashwini Kumaras will get the offering. And from then on, Ashwini Kumaras have also got an offering in the sacrifices. So this is the story of Chaitanya Maharshi, Shariyadi and Sukanya. Now, why all these stories in the Bhagavatam? This is the question, isn't it? So it is not that stories. There are so many stories in this world, and people create so many stories also. But these are facts. What has happened throughout the history? How the life of the sages, life of the demigods, life of the kings, life of the devotees. All this is Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is nothing but the story of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. That is Srimad Bhagavatam. So why all these stories have been presented? There is also Vedavyasa Maharshi is keeping a lot of messages to this world. That is why these stories are there. The message is that you will see here, Chaitanya Maharshi was a great personality, wasn't he? He was by his knowledge, yogam, jnanam, all these three things he had in abundance. One could never say that in any way he was lacking any of these things. As far as knowledge is concerned, he was highly knowledgeable. All the books he has learned, everything, he has complete understanding. And not only that, he has practically experienced himself in life. In other words, he has practiced it and attained perfection in that. That is why he has elevated himself through yoga process. Ashtanga yogam, jnana yogam, sangha yogam, everything he had. So in other words, there was nothing lacking in his life. Perfection, he is very close to perfection in other words. He has reached that level of realizations also. And you could see that in his activities with Shariati and Sukanya and Ashwini Kumaras, he has displayed that, his capacity as a yogi, as a jnani, as a successful spiritualist, in other words. But look at his situation. No matter how strong you become in spiritual life, not only spiritual, material life, of course, we'll talk that later. Even in spiritual life, how strong you become, Maya has two ropes in her hand. And with those two ropes, she will bind you and pull you down. And one of them is, for the men, it is women and gold, or wealth, in other words. And for the women, it is men and the wealth. Kamini and Kanjanam. That is how in the Bhagavatam it says there. So either women or gold. In other words, these two things. These are Maya's considered to be two ropes. No doubt about it. In this case, Chavana Maharshi, by seeing Sukanya, all the jnanam has gone in 1 second. All the yogam has also gone. Samadhi has also gone its own way. And he got attracted to Sukanya at that time. So this is the nature of the Maya. Maya is powerful. Maya is so powerful that with these two ropes, Kamini and Kanchanam, or in other words, gold and the woman, it's the other way also. For women it is men, for men it's women. In either of these two things, with these two ropes, Maya binds us to this material world and will not allow you to leave this material world easily. That is the message Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying to us through the story of Chavana Maharshi. Now, if through Chavana Maharshi the story was Kamini or women, the next story in the Bhagavadam, in the next chapter, is the story of wealth, Kanchanam. So that is how one to another he takes it through. That the story of the other king, Nabhaga, which comes in the next chapter, and Krishna and Ambarish's father, Nabhaga, that is where the story that comes in. So Nabhaga was one of the kings of the one of the Kshatriya kings in the sons of Shraddhadeva or Vaivasvata Manu. And this Nabhaga had a son by name Nabhaga. How did this name Nabhaga comes? Because Nabhaga had many sons, and Nabhaga was one of them. So at one point, Nabhaga was a brahmachari, and he went to study from his in the Gurukulam. He wanted to spend his time in Gurukula for many years to study. So when this boy was away, Nabhaga was away, the other brothers, Nabhaga's other children, they decided that we should share the wealth of the king. Because normally in many parents, many families who has accumulated a lot of wealth, there will always be a crisis at the end. When the old man is ready to die or close to death, the children will start discussing how should we share the wealth. That's why they are concerned about. The old man is gone now, why worry about him? He's on his way out. So better not waste too much time. If we can sort it out now, everything. And this has been going on. It is today also valid. It's valid then also. So, of course, in the modern world, there's so many arrangements we have made through wills and this and that. But whatever it is, the business is the same. It hasn't changed. It's sharing the wealth at the end. So our prince Nabhaga was away at this time, when the father, Nabhaga, was more or less close to leaving the family and going away or going to the forest or something. So the other children, his brothers, decided that we should share the wealth. So Nabhaga was the youngest, and he didn't know much about wealth and all. He was a brahmachari. What does a brahmachari know about wealth? Brahmachari only knows as long as he gets his prasadam and a place to sleep, brahmachari is happy. He didn't think too much about it, about the complexities of this world. So this Nabhaga was away at Gurukulam. The others decided to share all the wealth. They decided, what does he need the money for? He's a brahmachari anyway. Let him go. He can just go and live as a brahmachari life. We will have all the property and the wealth to ourselves. So they all partitioned the wealth and they took everything for themselves. And when Nabhaga came back after his Gurukula education, everything, he found out what has happened. And he didn't know what to say, poor boy. He thought to himself, what am I supposed to do now? If they have taken all the wealth themselves. So he, at least out of courtesy, he asked them, "What is there anything for me in this?" he said to them. So they all looked at each other. How do we answer him this question? Because in their mind, they know that he is also entitled or qualified to have a part of this wealth. But nothing was kept for him because they have taken everything for themselves. Sometimes it happens like that, isn't it? Sometimes what happens is that something which is meant for everybody, a group of people will decide, we'll share it between us. Others can just forget it. So this kind of nature, mentality, clubs, making clubs or cliques or whatever it's called. So that's exactly what they did to this poor boy, Nabhaga. See, the word Nabhaga means one who didn't get his bhagam. Bhagam means share. Nabhagam. That is how that name came, Nabhaga. So Nabhaga means one who didn't get his part of the wealth, what he was entitled to. So that is called as Nabhaga. So Nabhaga asked them and they said to him that, oh, we have shared the wealth between ourselves. We thought as a brahmachari, what do you need the money for? This was their answer. But we have got our father, you can look after him if you like. He is your wealth, you can take him, he said. This poor brahmachari, not knowing anything, because this is what happens to brahmacharis. If you live as a brahmachari forever, it's better once for all to forget about material life. Because if you come back to material life, it will be very hard for the brahmachari to adjust to that life. So, our brahmachari Nabhaga thought that probably they have given father as my share. I'll take care of him then. So he said, and the others laughed themselves within, and they all left, they went away. So the old man and this young brahmachari together. Nabhaga said to his father that, how can they, is that okay, they're giving you as my share? He said, so Nabhaga said to Nabhaga, that is not correct what they have done. They have deliberately done it to cheat you. But it doesn't matter, you are a brahmachari. I will tell you something, how to get some money. That's all what you need at the end, isn't it? You need some Lakshmi somewhere. So he said to him that you are learned at least you have studied well, that's good. And you know the Vedas nicely. Vedic mantras are known to you. How to chant and when to chant. These things are known to you. You have practiced it very well. Go to the sacrifice where Angiras Maharshi is performing the sacrifice. In that sacrifice, they are performing a big sacrifice lasting for months and months. But on the sixth day of the sacrifice, when they will start chanting the mantras, they will suddenly get confused and they won't be able to chant the mantras. At that time, you go and help them. And in return, they will offer you the remnants of the sacrifice there. And that will be enough for you as a wealth. It will help you a lot, said. So this poor boy, brahmachari Nabhaga, took that instruction from his father, went to the sacrifice where Angiras Muni was performing the sacrifice, and in that sacrifice, exactly what he said, on the sixth day, when the sacrifice, hundreds and thousands of mantras were continuously being recited by the brahmanas there, somehow or the other, at that particular spot, when they came in, it's called Vaishudevam. It's a particular mantra in the Vedas related to that. Then when the Vaishudevam came, that was, they were not able to chant the mantras because the difficulty with all the Vedic mantras is you can't read from the books, first of all. Because if you read from the books, you won't get the correct Anushtupa or Chandasa, what it's called, the correct meter. If you change the meter, meanings will change. And if you don't train yourself to chant it properly, whole result will be something disastrous going to happen later. So with all this, that is why it requires so many years and years of training under somebody who has learned it properly in a similar way from his previous teachers. So this training is required. And fortunately, Nabhaga had all this training, because this is all happening in the Satyuga. So that's why it was all available. Nabhaga knew these things. But somehow or the other, when they forgotten to chant the correct mantras, Nabhaga stepped in and helped them to chant. They were completely lost. They were not knowing how to chant the mantra, and the right mantras were not coming into their mind. So when Nabhaga helped them, the priests who were there, they were very pleased with this young brahmachari and told him that when the sacrifice is over, in the avashishtams, all the remnants will be there, which you can take. There will be so much gold and so many other things also. You can take all that and go away from here. Nabhaga said, we will do like that. So he stayed there. Sacrifice was over. And he decided to take all the remnants and leave that place. So that will be his wealth, he thought. And poor brahmachari thought, this is more than enough for me. Many brahmacharis think like that, isn't it? They get 20 pounds, they say, oh, it's much lot of money for me. They say like that. Whereas a householder, you give him 20 million, can I get another 10 million? This is the householder's mentality. Brahmachari is saying, this is too much for me, I can't handle it, he says. So this is the difference in him. But our Nabhaga said at that time that he has taken all the things, and then he was going to leave. At that time, somebody walked in there. And who was this? He was wearing a dark clothes. And in some Puranas also says he looked a little bit dark in color. But he was wearing dark clothes anyway. He walked in and he told him that you can't take it, he said. It is mine, he said. So he did not know what to say. He said, I don't know who you are, but I was told to come here as a good brahmachari. He was very polite and very honest about it. And he said to him, that I was told to come here by my father, and father told me that I can have all this wealth, remnants, what's left here. That's what I'm taking, he said. He said, no. In all the sacrifices, I get this, he said. All the remnants, what's left behind, is mine, he said. If you have any doubts, go and ask your father, he said. So, at that time, our brahmachari Nabhaga went back to Nabhaga again, to his father. And asked Nabhaga that I was taking the wealth, at that time somebody has come like this and claiming that everything is his. So Nabhaga thought for a while and he said to Nabhaga, that is correct. Actually, that belongs to Lord Shiva. It is known as Rudravagam. Rudravagam means the portion that is offered to Rudra. Everything what is left in the sacrifices arena or after the sacrifice is meant for Lord Shiva. It should be given to him. So Nabhaga came back to him, and he said to him, my father told me that it belongs to Lord Shiva, and I am sorry, I should not have taken it. He was so apologetic. So look at the beauty of that brahmachari training, that truthfulness right from the beginning, in the early days in life, and that truthfulness will look after him throughout his life. What happened, the result was that Lord Shiva himself revealed unto him. He told him, I have only come to test you about your qualities, and I am so pleased. Please take everything, he said. Not only that, he offered him more wealth than what was necessary. And that is the story of Nabhaga. And this Nabhaga, what does this story show? Earlier, you saw in Chyavana Maharshi's case, it was the beauty of Sukanya that has attracted Chyavana Maharshi to fall down. In the case of Nabhaga's brothers, the same way, what has happened? They were all very learned. They were all trained. They were all trained very well. They had studied all the shastras. The knowledge was there. But in spite of that, when the question of wealth came, when wealth became the priority, all the other things were forgotten. They were even willing to deceive their own brother, Nabhaga, in this case. So here, Maya has shown her power through gold or through wealth, how it can distract one from the principles. There is so many things in relationship with this. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to this, the principle involved is this, that that the knowledge which comes from scriptures. Shastra we study, and from Shastra we understand so many things. But if all this knowledge has not influenced a person's mind and consciousness, in other words, if it is not followed strictly in life, then that knowledge is also not developing into any useful thing. In other words, the spiritual culture that comes from that has to be there. And the associated what is known as nishtha. Nishtha means the steadiness in holding on to religious principles. And that is necessary. That is what makes spiritual life worthwhile. Sometimes we study Srimad Bhagavatam. We understand a lot of things. This is wrong, this is wrong. But when it comes to the crunch, we leave them and we go in the material, in the worldly way. Worldly tendencies comes back to us. That means if there is a quick, what do they call, money to be made, then that is what we will look at, if that's possible to do it. At that time, all these values, religious principles and spiritual values, everything is thrown into the air. It's completely ignored at that point. Why? Because we lack this, what is known as nishtha. Nishtha means that fixed mind to hold on to the values what one has realized as valuable in life. So what Vedavyasa Sri Shukan is saying here is that this material world is a place of distress in many ways. That everybody knows that. It is not very difficult to accept that. That the distress is there from beginning to end. Nobody comes here happily, and we know very well that we come here crying, leave this world also crying. Nobody is, and in between we think that we have a great time here. That's our nature. But those who are thoughtful can understand that you see here that a child 4 or 5 years old is always laughing and playing and enjoying everything, whatever comes to him. He's trying to enjoy everything. As soon as the same person, when he gets about 80 or 90, you look at that face. Is he still doing the same thing like when he was 5 years old? By 80 or 90, you look at his face, you will see, all he will be able to tell you is the sequence of stories of distress from 5 years right up to 80 years. This is the material world. That is how this world is. And this is the nature of the material world. That's not going to change. So, looking at that 80-year-old man's face, and looking at that 5-year-old face, has he become more happy or has he become more distressed now? Now he has become so grave in his life, he can't even smile anymore. To that extent, he has become distressed in life. That is why it is. That one after the other, he has been fighting against the distress and all through the life, one thing or the other. And at this end of life, all that he can offer you is a mountain of distress. A big hill, huge hill, what he has accumulated all along the life. And that distress is there in his mind. And that is why he is not feeling that happiness when he was 5 years old, playing around. So this is the nature of the material world. And that is not going to change. Everybody is going through the same thing. People will say, I am enjoying this, I am enjoying that. That's all rubbish. There is no such thing. It is out of ignorance they talk like this. But the fact here is, what Bhagavatam is saying is, Srimad Bhagavatam and Sukadeva Goswami is saying there is, that even if you follow the religious principles, even if you stick to all the spiritual values of life, in spite of that, you have to become distressed in this world, like this. This is the nature how the material world works. That spiritual personalities also experience all the distress in this world, not that they don't. But they get protected by Krishna's arrangement because of their surrender to Krishna. They get protected. But important thing to note here is that even after following the religious principles and strictly adhering to the spiritual values, if you are experiencing distress, what can you say when you don't follow any of these things? What will be the situation? Just think about that. That all that is coming out from that life at the end is nothing but sinful activities, sinful life, and at the end going back to another body where one is continuously put into more and more distress, the result of this life. So Srimad Bhagavatam is saying there that earlier in the case of Chavana Maharshi, like Maya has engaged through the beauty of the Sukanya, Chavana Maharshi was attracted and had to leave his spiritual principles. Similarly, through the brothers of Nabhaga, the other brothers, although trained properly in spiritual life, in spite of that, they got attracted by wealth. So these two things, wealth and the women, these are the two ropes by which Maya binds everyone, no matter how powerful, whether he is spiritual or material or anything, doesn't matter. They are bound to this material world through these two ropes. And even after one follows the principles of spiritual life, even if one does that, material life is sometimes very difficult, that distress follows us. So one can imagine, if one does not even follow the religious principles, what will be the situation? One doesn't have to go into details. Because when you see somebody very, very distressed in life and committing so many activities out of distress, from distress comes different distresses manifest in different forms. And then distress follows him in different ways, because sinful activities means distress at the end. So if one does not even follow the spiritual values and religious principles, what can happen to them? That is what Srimad Bhagavatam is pointing out here in this story of the brothers of Nabhaga and through Chavana Maharshi. So after explaining all these things, Srimad Bhagavatam now moves on to, in the fourth and fifth chapter, one of the most interesting topic in the Srimad Bhagavatam, known as Ambarisha Charitam, the story of Maharaj Ambarish. And why this Ambarish was a devotee whom I do not know what to say, because Ambarish's life, Ambarish's activities and Ambarish's surrender, you do not find anywhere else in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the greatness of that personality. And because of this, Sudeva Goswami has decided that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, I will explain this to Maharaj Parikshit. And Parikshit, when he heard about the story of Ambarish Maharaj, asked this specific question to Sukadeva Goswami, that before we move into anything else, let me hear about Ambarish. This is what he says about that. That Parikshit's inquisitiveness gone up to such an extent that he wanted to hear about Maharaj Ambarish. And Maharaj Ambarish, which runs into two chapters, which we will discuss next Sunday, because it's 7 o'clock now. I'll just read one or two chapters and then we'll have some few minutes for questions, and we can talk about Ambarish, because that is a story in two chapters and requires a little bit more time, which we'll not be able to do it today. So, this story of Ambarish in the Bhagavatam is so famous. So famous means that Ambarish Maharaj's story in the Bhagavatam reading it once or twice, a devotee will understand how to become a devotee. That is the story of Ambarish. Ninth Canto, Chapter 1. Shri Raja Vacha Manvantarani Sarvani Toyoktani Shrutani Me Viryani Ananda Viryasya Hare Tatra Kradani Cham Yosau Satyavrato Nama Rajarshir Dravideshwaram Jnanam Yodhida Kalpande Lebhe Purushasevayam Savai Vivasvada Putro Manurasi Didishrutam Todastasya Sudavshokto Ikshvagu Pramukha Nrupaha Tesham Vamsham Pradak Brahman Vamshyanu Charitani Cham Kirtayasva Mahabhaga Nityam Shushrushadam Hinam Ye Bhudaye Bhavishyascha Bhavandadyadanaschaye Tesham Na Punya Kirtinam Sarvesham Vadavikramam Suda uvacham evam parikshita rajnya sadasi brahmavadinam
പൃഷ്ഠ പ്രോവാച ഭഗവാൻ ശുക പരമധർമ്മവിൽ ശ്രീ ശുക ഉവാച ശ്രൂയതാം മാനവോ വംശ പ്രാചുര്യേണ പരം തവ നിശക്യതേ വിസ്തരതോ വക്തും വർഷശതൈരവി പരാവരേഷാം ഭൂതാനാമാത്മായ പുരുഷ പരാ സ ഏവാസീതിദം വിശ്വം കൽക്കാന്തേ ന്യന്നകിഞ്ചന തസ്യ നാഭേ സമഭവൽ പത്മകോശോ ഹിരൺമയ തസ്മിൻ യജ്ഞേ മഹാരാജ സ്വയംഭുശ്ചതുരാനനാം മരീചർമനസസ്തസ്യ യജ്ഞേ തസ്യാപി കശ്യപ ദാക്ഷായണ്യം തദോദിത്യ വിവസ്വാനഭവൽ സുതാഹ തതോ മനുശ്രാദ്ധദേവ സംജ്ഞായാമാസ ഭാരത ശ്രദ്ധായാം ജനയാമാസ ദശപുത്രാൻ സമാത്മവാൻ ഇക്ഷ്വാകോ നൃഗശര്യാദി ദിഷ്ടദൃഷ്ടകരോഷകാൻ നരിഷ്യന്തം പൃഷദ്രം ച നഭകം ച കവിം വിദൂ അപ്രജസ്യ മനോ പൂർവം വസിഷ്ഠോ ഭഗവാൻ കില മിത്രാവരുണയോരിഷ്ടിം പ്രജാർത്ഥമകരോൽ പ്രഭൂ തത്ര ശ്രദ്ധാ മനോപത്നി ഹോദാനം സമയാചതാം ദുഹിത്രാർത്ഥമുഭാഗമ്യം പ്രണിപത്യ പയോ വ്രതാം പ്രഷിതോധ്വരിണ്യാഹോദാ ധ്യായം സൽസുസമാഹിതാഹ ഹവിഷിവ്യജരൽ തേന വഷൽക്കാരം ഗൃണദ്വിജാഹ ഹോതുസ്ത്വധ്യപിചാരേണ കന്യേളാ നാമസാഭവൽ താവിലോക്യമനും പ്രാഹ നാദിഹൃഷ്ടമനാ ഗുരും ഭഗവൻ കിമിതം ജാതം കർമ്മവോ ബ്രഹ്മവാദിനാം വിപര്യയമഹോ കഷ്ടം ദൈവം സ്യാൽ ബ്രഹ്മവിക്രയാ യൂയം മന്ത്രവിദോ യുക്ത തപസാ ദഗ്ധഗിൽഭിഷാഹ കുതാ സങ്കൽപവൈഷമ്യം അനൃതം വിബുദേ ദ്വിഷാം വിബുദേഷുവാം തന്നിഷമ്യ വജസ്തസ്യ ഭഗവാൻ പ്രവിരാമഹാം ഹോ ദുർവ്യതിക്രമം ജ്ഞാത്വാ ഭഭാഷേ രവിനന്ദനം ഏതൽ സങ്കൽപവൈഷമ്യം ഹോ തുസ്തേ വ്യഭിചാരദാഹ തഥാപി സാധയിഷ്യേതേ സുപ്രജാസ്ത്വം സ്വദേജസാം ഏവം വ്യവസിതോ രാജൻ ഭഗവാൻ സമഹായശ അസ്തൌ ശീതാദിപുരുഷാം ഇലായാം പുംസ്ത്വകാമ്യയാം തസ്മൈ കാമവരം തുഷ്ടോ ഭഗവാൻ ഹരിരീശ്വര ദോ വിഭാ വിലാഭവൽ തേന സുദ്ധിംന പുരുഷർഷഭാം സ ഏകദാ മഹാരാജ വിചരൻ മൃഗയാം വനെ മൃതക്കതിപയാമാത്യൈ അശ്വമാരുഹ്യ സൈന്ധവം പ്രഗൃഹ്യ രുചിരം ചാപം ശരാംശ്ച പരമാത്ഭുതാൻ ദംശിതോനു മൃഗം വീരോ ജഗാമാദിശമുത്തരാം സ കുമാരോ വനം മേരോ അധസ്താൽ പ്രവിവേശ യത്രാസ്തേ ഭഗവാൽ ശർവോ രമമാണേ സഹോമയാം തസ്മിൻ പ്രവിഷ്ടമേവാസോ സുദ്ധിംന പരവീര അപശ്യൽ ശ്രിയമാത്മാനം അശ്വം ച വടവാം നൃപാം തഥാ തനുഗ തതനുഗാ സർവേ ആത്മലിംഗ വിപര്യയം ദൃഷ്ട്വാ വിമനസോ ഭുവൻ വീക്ഷമാണാ പരസ്പരം ശ്രീരാജോ വാചാം കഥമേവ ഗുണം ദേശ കേന വാ ഭഗവാൻ കൃത പ്രശ്നമേനം സമാചക്ഷ പരം കൗതൂഹലം ഹിനാം ശ്രീശുകവാചാം ഏകദാ ഗിരിശം ദൃഷ്ടോ മഷയസ്തത്ര സുവ്രതാ ദിശോ വിധിമിരാഭാസ കുർവന്ത സമുപാഗമൻ താൻ വിലോക്യാംബികാം ദേവി വിവാസാ ക്രീഡിതാഭൃശം ഭർത്തുരംഗാൽ സമുത്ഥായ നീവിമാശ്വതപര്യഥാൽ ഋഷയോ വിധയോർവീക്ഷ്യ പ്രസംഗം രമമാണയോ നിവൃത്ത പ്രയുസ്താസ്മാൻ നരനാരായണാശ്രമം തദിദം ഭഗവാനഹ പ്രിയായ പ്രിയകാമ്യയ സ്ഥാനം യ പ്രവിശേദേതൽ സവൈയോഷിൽ ഭവേദിതി തത ഊർധ്വം വനം തദ്വൈ പുരുഷാ വർജയന്തി സാ ചാനുജര സംയുഗത വിജചാരവനാദ്വനം അതതാമാശ്രമാഭ്യാസേ ചരന്തി പ്രമദോത്തമാം സ്ത്രീഭീ പരിവൃതാം വീക്ഷ്യ ചകമേ ഭഗവാൻ ഭുതാഹ സാബിദം ചകമേ സുഭ്രു സോമരാജസുതം പതിം സതസ്യം ജനയാമാസ പുരൂരവാസമാത്മജം ഏവം സ്ത്രീത്വമനുപ്രാപ്ത സുജിംനോ മാനവോ നൃപാഹ സസ്മാരസകുലാചാര്യം വസിഷ്ഠമിതി ശുശ്രുമാം സദസ്യതാം ദശാം ദൃഷ്ട്വാ കൃപയാ വൃഷപീഡിതാഃ സുദ്ധിന്യസ്യാശയൻ പുംസ്ത്വം ഉപാധാവത ശങ്കുരം ശങ്കരം തുഷ്ടസ്തസ്മൈ സ ഭഗവാൻ കൃഷയേ പ്രിയമാവഹൻ സ്വാം ച വാചമൃതം കുർവൻ ഇദമാഹ വിശാം പദേ മാസം പുമാൻ സഭവിത മാസം സ്ത്രീ തവ ഗോത്രജാഃ ഇത്ഥം വ്യവസയാ കാമം സുദ്ധിന്നോ വധുമേദിനീം ఆచార్య నిగ్రహాల్ కామం లబ్ధ్వా పుంస్త్వం వ్యవస్థయ పాలయామాస జగదీం నాభినందన్ స్మదం ప్రజాః తస్యోల్కలోగయో రాజన్ విమలంశ్చ సుదాశ్రయాః దక్షిణాపధరా జానో బభూవోర్ధర్మవల్సలాః తద పరిణదే కాలే ప్రతిష్టానపది ప్రభూః పురూరవసముల్సృజ్య గాం పుత్రాయ గదో వనం. శ్రీమల్పాయోదే మహాపురాణే పరమహంసం సంహితాయాం నవమస్కందే ఇళోవాఖ్యానే ప్రథమోధ్యాయ సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం. గోవింద గోవింద శ్రీశుక ఉవాచ ఏం గదేత శుద్ధిమ్నే మనుర్వైవస్వదస్సుదే పుత్రగామస్తవస్తే వే యమునాయం శతం సమాహ తదో జన్మనుర్దేవ అపత్యార్థం హరిం ప్రభం ఇక్ష్వాగో పూర్వజాన్ పుత్రాం లేవే ససదృశాన్ దశాం ఉషద్రస్తు మనోపౌత్రో గోపాలో గురుణా కృతాః పాలయామాసగాయతో రాత్ర్యాం వీరాసన వ్రదాః ఏకదా ప్రావిశల్గోష్ఠం శార్దూలో నిశివర్షది నిశివర్షది శయానాం గావౌత్థాయ భీదాస్తా బిభ్రభుర్వ్రజే ఏకాం జగ్రాహ బలవాన్ సా చుక్రోషభయాతురా తస్యాస్తల్క్రందిదం శ్రుత్వా పుషద్ధ్రోపి ససారః గడ్ఘమాదాయతరసా ప్రలీనోడ్గణే నిశి అజానన్నహద్బ్రభ్రో శిర శార్దూల శంగయా వ్యాఘ్రోపి విక్రశ్రవణో స్త్రిషాం శగ్రాహరస్తదా నిశ్చక్రామ భృశం భీదో రక్తం పది సముల్సృజన్ మన్యమానో హదం వ్యాఘ్రం ప్రషద్ర పరవీర అద్రాక్షిల్ సుహదాం బభ్రం వ్యష్టాయాం నిశి దుఃఖిదాః తం శశావకులాచార్య కృదాగ సమగామదాం నక్షత్రబంధు శూద్రస్త్వం కర్మణాభవిదామునా ఏం శప్తస్తు గరుణా ప్రత్యగృహ్ణాల్ కృతాంజలి అధారయల్వృతం వీర ఊర్ధ్వైరేతముని ప్రియం వాసుదేవే భగవతి సర్వాత్మని వరేమలే ఏకాందిత్వం గదో భక్త్యా సర్వభూత సుహృల్సమా విముక్తసంగా శాంతాల్మా సంయదాక్షో పరిగ్రహ ఎదృచ్ఛయోపవన్యేన కల్పయన్ మృతిమాల్మనా ఆల్పన్యాత్మానమాధాయ జ్ఞానతృప్త సమాహిత విజయారమహీమేదాం జడాంధబధిరాకృతి బధిరాకృతి ఏం మృతోవనం గత్వా దృష్ట్వా భావాగ్నిముత్తిదం తేనోపయుక్తకరణో బ్రహ్మభావపరం ముని కవికనీయాన్ముషయేషు నిస్పృహో విసృజ్యరాజ్యం సహ బంధుభిర్వనం నివేశచిత్తే పురుషం స్వరోచిషం వివేశ కైశోరవయా పరం గదాః కరుషాన్ మానవాదాసన్ కరుషాక్షత్రజాదయ ఉత్తరాభదగోప్తారో బ్రహ్మణ్యా ధర్మవల్సలాః దృష్టాదష్టమభూక్షత్రం బ్రహ్మభూయగదం క్షితౌ మృగస్య వంశాసుమతిర్భూతజ్యోతిస్తదో వసూ వసో ప్రతీకస్థల్పుత్ర ఓఘవానోఘవల్పిద కన్యా చౌఘవదీ నామ సుదర్శనం వాహదాం చిత్రసేనా నరిష్యంద్య దక్షస్తస్య సుదోభవల్ తస్య మీధాం మీధ్వాం సదకూర్చం ఇంద్రసేన సుదల్ సుదా విధిహోత్రస్తింద్రసేనల్ తస్య సత్యశ్రవామభుల్ ఉరుశ్రవాసుదస్తస్య దేవదత్తస్తదోభవల్ తదో అగ్నివేశో భగవాన్ అగ్నిస్వయమభూల్ సుదా కాయినమిది విఖ్యాతో జాదుకర్ణ్యో మహాన్ ఋషీ తదో బ్రహ్మగులం జాతం అగ్నివేశ్యాయనం నృప నరిష్యందన్వయ ప్రోక్త దిష్టవంశమదశృణు నాభాగో దిష్టపుత్రోస్య కర్మణా వైశ్యదాం గదాః భలందన సుదస్తస్య వల్సప్రీతిర్భలందనాల్ వల్సప్రీతే సుద ప్రాంశు స్థల్సుదం ప్రమదిం విదు ఖనిద ప్రమదేస్తస్మా చాక్షుషోద వివింశది వింశది సుదోరం ఖని నేత్రోస్య ధార్మిక కరంధమో మహారాజస్తస్య సీదాత్మజో నృప తస్యా వీక్షల్ సుదోయస్య మరుత్తశ్చక్రవర్తి అభుల్ సంవర్తోయ జయద్యం వై మహాయోగ్యం యోగ్యంగిరస్సుదాః మరుత్తస్య యథా యజ్ఞో నధాన్యస్య కశ్చన సర్వం హిరణ్మయం త్వాస్య కించిత్ చాస్య శోభనం అమాత్యదింద్రసోమేనా దక్షిణాభిర్ద్విజాదయ మరుద పరివేష్టారో విశ్వదేవా సభాసదాః మరుత్తస్య తమఃపుత్రస్తస్యాసీల్ రాజ్యవర్ధన సుదిస్తల్సుదో యజ్ఞే సౌధుదేయో నరస్సుదాః తల్సుద కేవలస్తస్మాల్ బంధుమాన్ వేగవాంస్తదా బంధుస్తస్యాల్భవద్దస్య తటబిందుర్మహీపది తం భేజేలంబుషాదేవీ భజనీయ గుణాలయం వరాప్సరాయద పుత్ర కన్యా చేర్ ఇడవిడా భవల్ రస్యాముల్పాదయామాస విశ్రవాధనదం సుదం ప్రాదాయ వీద్యాం పరమాం ఋషిర్యోగేశ్వరాల్పితో విశాల శూన్యబంధుశ్చ ధూమ్రగేదుశ్చ దల్సుదాః విశాలో వంశకృద్రాజ వైశాలీం నిర్మమే పురిం హేమచంద్రసుదస్తస్య ధూమ్రాక్షస్తస్య జాల్మయ തൽപുത്രാൽ സംയമാദാസിൽ കൃഷാശു സഹദേവജാം കൃഷാശു അൽസോമദത്തോഭുൽ അശ്വമേധൈരിടസ്പതിം ഇഷ്ട്വാ പുരുഷമാഭാഗ്യം യതിം യോഗേശ്വരാശ്രിതാഃ സോമദത്തിസ്തു സമതിൽ തൽസുതോ ജനമേജയാം ഏതേ വൈശാലഭൂപാലാ സ്തൃണബിന്ദോ യശോധരാഃ ഇതി ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാപുരാണേ പരമഹംസ്യാം സംഹിതായാം നവമസ്കന്ദേ ദ്വിതീയോധ്യായ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ So those are the two chapters. The second chapter spoke about the different sons of the Kavi, Prishadakta and his story and Karusha. And in the next chapter, which we'll read next Sunday, is about Shariyati and Sukanya, that story. And then they move on to Ambarish Maharaj's story. Because it's 10 past 7 now. If there is any questions, please. Yes. Satyugam doesn't. Things can always change. In Kali Yugam also people are chanting Hare Krishna, isn't it? Why is that? It works both ways. So, just like when you say Satyugam, why it has happened? When we say Satyugam means generally the consciousness is like that. Generally. But in this particular incident, why it has mentioned in the Bhagavatam also, that no matter how much one gets spiritually as advanced spiritually by studying Shastra and practicing spiritual life, even then Maya can control them still. It is just to show the supremacy of Maya over everything else. How powerful Maya is. That even after studying, practicing everything, in spite of that, at the end they got victimized by these two things. So, like Nabhaga's other children, like Nabhaga's brothers who did this, they shouldn't have done that. They wouldn't have done it also. But suddenly the attraction for wealth came in. That's Maya. So Maya, it also shows to us that those two, also an indication to those who are practicing spiritual life. This is what it is basically to telling to them that in spiritual life these are impediments. These will come and cause a problem to you at some stage or the other. If you have not learned from the Shastra what we have to learn, like as I said before, that even after studying Shastram, following everything, material world is a place of distress. Distress is following everybody in some form or the other. So you can imagine, if you're not following anything, what would be the situation? So just to explain these points to us, Sukadeva Goswami picked up these things and put it in the Bhagavatam. That's the purpose behind it. Okay, we'll stop there. All glory Srila Prabhupada.